Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens, and we're thrilled to be talking to Bosco Anthony today. He is the founder of Tribe One, a top digital marketing agency that helps companies tell their story and come up with social media strategies. He's also a blogger and a wildly popular speaker who's touched a chord with audiences at engagements like TEDx and Social Media Week. But behind all of his success, Bosco is an immigrant from East Africa with an incredible story. Welcome to the show, Bosco.
Thank you for having me, Laura. I'm Jen.
Thank you for joining us. And tell us about your background. It's very unique. How did you get to where you are?
Well, I think my story, like many immigrants, is one that is filled with dreams and hopes of a better life. I was born in Tanzania, East Africa, and my parents really wanted to provide a better future for their kids. My sister had graduated in Nebraska, and there was a circle of events that happened in Tanzania that sort of swayed them to really create an urgency to leave Africa. Part of it was the Rwanda and Burundi genocides that was starting to affect our borders and the way of life for us. But at the same time, we were very close to the events around the American embassy bombing in Africa as well. So some of the things that were going on in Tanzania was starting to really just create a sense of urgency for all of us to move. And while Tanzania is a beautiful country and it's a beautiful place where a lot of tourists, you know, go to, it's also a place that has a lot of hardship. And so it was an immigrant story like many that many, you know, have when they're coming to a different place. And you know, all you have to do is look at the Statue of Liberty to know the message of hope when it comes to moving from one country to another. I was recently reminded by a quote by Emma Lazarus, who said, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to break free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest off to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. And I think that, you know, every immigrant has that hope that, you know, someday you will move to a better place and a better land.
So you moved to Canada and you became this digital marketing whiz. How did all this happen?
Well, I started off my career in the corporate sector, and I ended up working for a company that was in the tourism sector, and I ended up getting headhunted for an online marketing boutique agency. And this was one of the first online marketing courses that were helping people to tell their story and build their brands online. And I was fortunate enough to stumble upon their traveling team that basically had conferences around the world. And I was one of their youngest speakers that basically got a lot of experience on digital marketing through traveling and speaking to different cities. And I was fortunate, to speak for large audiences in Sydney and the United Kingdom and parts of the U.S. at a very young age. So I sort of became the accidental speaker. One of our speakers had food poisoning one day, and you know, nobody knew the script better than I did. So I jumped up on stage and I realized I enjoyed speaking. And that's sort of how I got a passion for speaking. As far as digital marketing, I worked for a company that allowed me to learn their products. And eventually I went off and built my own agency just after the recession.
What are some of the mistakes you see people making with digital marketing? It seems like everybody who has any kind of a business or any kind of a brand, whether it's a very small corner store business or something like that, to a big Fortune 500 company, obviously has to be involved in that. But what mistakes do you see people making these days?
Well, I think the key element is that everybody wants to be viral. Everybody wants to become digitally famous or digitally more affluent. And I think that what most people forget is that it takes a moment to go viral, but a lifetime to stay relevant. And so, the biggest mistake is trying to rush a growth pattern. I'm a digital strategist first. So what I do is I interview my clients to identify where they want to go. And what I create is an action plan that basically further matures their growth patterns. And we call it digital growth maturity. And that takes time. It's not something that can happen quickly unless you happen to be lucky enough to go viral. But even being viral means that you have to grow and you have to be able to feed the beast. So I think the most common misconception is the steps necessary to get to the destination. And a lot of people take that for granted.
What's the first thing that you ask a company or a person who wants to build their brand when they come to you?
Well, I think for me personally, you know, I usually ask people to tell me where they want to go. And, you know, it's sort of the discovery, the moment of discovery. What seas do you want to sail, and why do you exist? These are the most common questions that every brand should ask themselves when they want to grow digitally. It's really key to understand where you want to end up. And once you do that, then you can sort of deconstruct and re-engineer your path. I like to look at things backwards. So if I know where people want to go or where they want to end up, I basically can create a blueprint visually and in my head as well of what are the necessary steps and milestones and checkpoints to get there. But, you know, the challenge that we have today is that a lot of people look at what other brands are doing, and they sort of want to keep up with the Joneses and say, okay, well, you know, we want to do it this way, or we want to be the next Red Bull or the next Coca-Cola. What people don't understand is that it took many years for Red Bull to build a community, and, you know, they have one of the largest marketing budgets in the world. So, you know, when a small business comes to me with an idea, it's really important to create that feasibility. So understanding the journey is really important.
And aren't we also talking about something that really, in many ways, is uncharted territory? I mean, this is a world that has really just expanded so much in recent years and is changing by the day.
Absolutely. I mean, the challenge that most digital marketers and strategists have is staying relevant. I mean, I've had moments where I've had to go give a talk on search engine optimization or, you know, how to rank on Google, and I've had to change my slides 20 minutes before I go up on stage because there's been a new change or there's been a new update that changes my entire direction of my talk. So
wow.
as a digital storyteller and a marketer, you know, you have to sort of not just keep up with the times, but more importantly, understand where we're going and what are some of the trends that are leading us to move on with the journey. You know, I mean, a few months ago, nobody even knew what cryptocurrencies were. And now we're talking about Bitcoin and the relevance of Bitcoin. And, you know, when is Bitcoin going to crash? When is the best time to buy? When is the best time to sell? I mean, we have trends that are changing and impacting us almost every day. And the thing about digital disruption today is it's affecting modern day life and ways of living. You know, now you can buy your groceries online and, you know, have it shipped to your door. Amazon is changing how we shop because of the usage of drones. Lifeguards can now save lives quicker, sending drones out to people who are struggling in the waters. You know, digital disruption is changing how we act. And I don't think that that just happened overnight. You know, you can't underestimate technology. At the end of the day, technology innovates because of people's innovation. And what people do today is they ask themselves, how can we use technology to make our lives even more relevant or better or more effective, for better or worse? And so, you know, it's one of those things where we're constantly evolving, and we have to constantly adapt as well.
You mentioned Red Bull a couple minutes ago, and I'm wondering, how does a company like Red Bull, a giant, connect in a way that small businesses don't?
So I think this is, you know, the most logical differences between the mom and pop stores and bigger brands is bandwidth and capacity. I think the biggest lesson I've learned as a business owner is, you know, your bandwidth of your workforce really can change how you do things. I mean, you know, that saying that a village makes the tribe is really key when it comes to the success of brands like Red Bull. Red Bull has spent years building a community of followers and people that, you know, they engage through their events, photographers, videographers, storytellers. But at the end of the day, I think, and this doesn't really mean that the big brands thrive on this, because I've seen even local brands and smaller brands do this really well. It's just a question of capacity. But the biggest thing that, you know, to answer your question, the biggest reason why people connect is through creative content that creates an emotion, a human emotion, and in turn that creates a human connection. So at the end of the day, you know, someone defines storytelling as the power of influence through the use of effective storytelling through various mediums and means. And so if a brand can tell a story and inspire someone through creative content that really creates that emotion, whether it's sadness, happiness, whether it's awe, whether it's shock, that is the true meaning of human connection. It's why people like us, you know, save Super Bowl commercials, or we'll remember the Super Bowl commercial, not necessarily the Super Bowl, you know, score.
Right. And why those commercials get so many views after the Super Bowl's over, years
absolutely,
after.
Absolutely.
They've struck a chord.
You know, they struck a chord. And you know, let's just take a look at music, for example. I was watching the Grammys last weekend. The Grammys took place a few weekends ago, but I happened to record it on my PVR. They were talking about the song Despacito and why Despacito had the largest amount of views in history, and you know the largest views on YouTube, and you know it was nominated for the Grammys. At the end of the day, regardless of what your flavor is, regardless of what your choice of music is, whether you're listening to Clapton or you're listening to a Latin song, at the end of the day, what really created that viewership is human connection. And in this particular song, it became famous not only because it was playing 20 times on the radio, but also because people connected through YouTube and were able to use technology and access to basically appreciate a song, you know? And so at the end of the day, capacity and bandwidth is so powerful. And, you know, the bigger brands end up coming up with the creative content, but they end up using the same platforms that your regular mom and pop businesses use. And so the quality of the video, the type of the message, the relevance of the content, the flavors of how you design a video, these are the most important questions in today's history when it comes to storytelling. You know, the focus of how you tell a message can change everything. And you know, today we repurpose content. We take the same content and basically flood our audiences in different areas, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a radio channel, whether it's a digital blog. So, you know, the big winners today are the ones that can create that creative content, use multiple platforms, and really pass the message through the mediums that our audience listens to. You know, there's going to be a day when movie theaters will have to start to adapt to movies through digital networks. We're already seeing this right now at Netflix. And, you know, I'm a big movie fan. As a storyteller, I love watching movies. And, you know, when I go to a theater today, they're already telling me that I can access this movie digitally in a few weeks from now if I basically were part of their online portal. So everybody is trying to take their product, their message, and they're trying to morph it into a platform that's relatable to the audience. And I think if you can do that, then you've won the battle, at least the starting stages of the battle, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Tell us about the term social listening. What is that and why is it important?
So social listening is, you know, is a term that's very similar to social monitoring. And social monitoring became very famous when people started having voices and started using social platforms to carry out their messages. One of the most perfect examples was the gentleman that witnessed his luggage being thrown by a few United Airlines employees and decided to make a song that basically was titled United Through My Guitar or something like that. And then he wrote a book about it and he became famous because he basically created this YouTube video that went viral, and it was all about how United employees were basically mishandling luggage. And when that happened, a lot of brands weren't ready a lot of brands underestimated social media. So what ended up happening was there was many scenarios, and we see it today too with pizza employees, Walmart employees, you know, retail employees, where some of their actions have been highlighted on social platforms. So social listening and social monitoring became very important for brands to combat challenges within their own brand. It became how they managed their PR. You know, in Vancouver, Canada, we had a gentleman that went on a rant on Facebook about one of the fairies, and it went viral. The challenge with things like this is that where is the accountability of the person out there that's, you know, using a social platform to complain or talk about a brand? You know, today, some people use platforms unethically, or there's no responsibility. And, you know, sometimes we see this even in the restaurants where reviews are competitors are basically putting down other brands, but, you know, disguising it under a social review. And so, you know, humans have a way, unfortunately, of taking something that's supposed to be used for good and sometimes using it more for leverage. And we've seen this happen decades and decades through history. So social listening and social monitoring really is the importance of evaluating a message about one's brand, and also what are the necessary actions that a brand takes when they effectively listen to what the audience has to say. Now, this is going to change as we move along with different platforms and technologies. You know, you can see brands, you know, look at reviews now for good. You know, one of the most successful brands that looks at reviews is TripAdvisor. I have helped my own clients thrive through TripAdvisor. I have an ATV company in Mexico that works with us. And they were the number 10 activity to do in Puerto Vallarta. And today on TripAdvisor, they're the number one activity to do there. So, you know, sometimes social listening can create positive impact, and you can really learn from what your audience has to say. But social listening, really, the relevance of social listening is the access that the audience has today to speak freely and openly about a brand.
How do you rebrand a company that hasn't been successful in the past? Is all hope lost if they don't connect immediately, or are there some things you can do to help revive it?
Well, I'll give you some theory, but I'll also give you an example. So for me, I think it really comes down to the purpose of the company and the problem you're trying to solve, and not only how you're going to tell that story, but the relevance that you have to an audience. And I'm going to give you an example from a Canadian brand that we worked with. I worked with an organization called the Now That's Ugly Society. And in Canada, they owned the trademark for the first ugly sweater. So I don't know if you guys wear ugly sweaters where you guys
at
are.
At Christmas time, yeah.
Yeah. So the ugly sweaters trademark came in Canada about 12 years ago. And it was these four brothers that were really inspired to have these house parties and invite people over at Christmas time. And they basically did this to raise funds for one of their community members named Ashlyn, who basically had cancer. And her wish was to learn how to surf in Hawaii. And so they raised funds for this house party, and they basically were able to send her to Hawaii to learn how to surf. She wrote them a very touching letter. There was a photograph of her surfing. And then a few months later, she passed away. And they continued to do this house parties in her memory, and they wanted to then start to create this nonprofit movement. The challenge was that the branding was really around the house party and not about Ashlyn's message. So, you know, as the years evolved, the branding wasn't really growing. It was sort of stagnant. And they realized they needed to do something that involved the community with a stronger message. So they reinvented their purpose and created a purpose that basically, to them, allowed everybody to be part of the community. And their purpose was to create smiles within their own community. Now, the Ugly Society partnered up with the Children's Wish Foundation, and they basically granted wishes every year. And when I came on board, we were basically going to take their purpose and now tell a story. So the first thing we did for that event, they created community marathons, and they created a community Christmas event where they invited, you know, families and people to come over. They had a Christmas band, they had live music, and all the proceeds basically went towards the Children's Wish Foundation. So, you know, that first event that I came on board, we brought in 12 photographers and, you know, about 7 different videographers, and we created almost 5,000 pieces of digital footage, everything from photography to professional photography to micro videos to macro videos. And we spent the next year using all that footage, and we basically built an entire online community through social media, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat. And, you know, we went from a following of 300 people to a following of a few thousand people within weeks of us relating to our audience. But when I look back at what made that campaign successful was we really acted on the message, and the message was creating smiles within our communities. And today, you know, this Ugly Society has grown. They're looking at creating chapters. They're looking at franchising it, really taking their message across Canada. Now, you know, we started from grassroots and we've grown, I would say, a little bit aggressively. But the reason why this has happened is because we've had to reinvent ourselves. And it really came down to the core message. And that is basically, what is the purpose of the brand? So I usually like to ask people that, you know, how do you intend to live out your purpose through your message? For me, my purpose in business is to empower digital brands, but my personal purpose in life is to leave people better than I found them. And if I can do that, whether it's through an interview, a meeting, a project, a website, a launch, a marketing campaign, if I can leave the audience better than I found them, then for me, I've accomplished my goal. And everything else, whether it's success, followership, you know, financial reward, all of that is a result of that purpose. But it's really asking yourself, what is the core of your message? And, you know, I guess I'm going to ask you guys a question. What is the purpose of this, the interviews that you have and you're conducting in the next few weeks?
Oh, well, I think one of the things that we want to do is to really spread simple messages about things that nobody told us, you know, in growing up, or you know, things that we couldn't have learned on our own. And well, we want to kind of mine the minds of other people who have had great experiences and have something to share.
Well, and I think, you know, when I was feeling really lost and having the whole millennial problem of not really knowing exactly what I wanted to do, I found that I would listen to podcasts and they really, really helped me. But a lot of the times these successful people would only talk about the good times that they had and talk about all the great things they'd done. And I think that talking to guests that have been successful and learning from their moments that maybe weren't so great, that they don't share with people all the time, that's really where I think people can benefit. And that's really what we wanted to do with this show.
Uh-huh. And I think we don't want to waste people's time. We want to give real nuggets of information that people will say, wow, nobody told me that before. Wow, that's really useful. Wow, my life has been bettered by listening to Jan and Laura and Bosco and whoever else we might have on. We really want to,
you know,
add value to your listening time. That's what I think our goal is.
And to sum that for me, when I hear this and, you know, doing my research, you know, I was thinking about this and I was like, if I had to sum up a tagline, mm-hmm. you know, and again, this is just me being creative as a storyteller. I came up with one word, one sentence, and it was creating inspiration through experiences and stories.
Totally. That's exactly it.
And coming from Africa, where, you know, you hear stories of people sitting down together and listening to elders speak about, you know, the past and wisdom being passed from one generation to the other. You know, if you take that same concept, we're doing this now through other mediums. We're doing it through podcasts. We're doing it through digital listening tools. But at the end of the day, as humans, we're basically going through the moments of history. We're just using it through different mediums.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the things that I think a lot of people who are interested in creating a brand or furthering their company, one of the things they're doing is blogging, because it seems simple enough, it seems attainable enough. And I know blogging 101 is one of the topics that you've spoken on. Share a little of that wisdom with us in terms of blogging. What mistakes people make and what advice you'd have?
Should people do it?
Yeah, should people
There's
do
so
it?
There's so many blogs. Should people do it?
All right. So I'll tell you that blogging has evolved. So I'll tell you what blogging is, what blogging was back then, what blogging is today. So blogging 101, and this is where I got my big break, was I was asked to speak at Social Media Week, and I was voted one of the top business bloggers in Vancouver in 2012. And I happened to speak during Social Media Week for a conference called FP Reach. And I had thrown some things on stage that ended up being viral on Twitter. And you know, that they call that microblogging because Twitter is a collection of small words that turn into sentences. And, you know, I ended up going viral locally. And I also ended up opening the conference for a very famous social media influencer by the name of Gary Vaynerchuk. And Gary tweeted at me after my spotlight on stage and said, you know, get ready. I'm about to get on stage and, you know, I'm hearing good things about your talk. And within a few minutes, I had, you know, a few thousand people start following me because of that one tweet from Gary Vaynerchuk to myself.
Wow.
So that's how I got my big break. And that was in 2012. And at the time, you know, my topics were about blogs and the importance of blogging. Basically, blogging is digital archiving and digital thoughts that are spread through a medium of words. And that's where blogs were, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. The problem with blogging is that it's something that you have to continue doing and stay focused at it. Now, for me, I blogged one blog post every day for a full year before I was nominated for Business Blogger in Vancouver. But, you know, at the end of the day, blogging today has infused to various forms of rich media, everything from photography to videos. Because people's attention span has changed. You know, if you look at things like the New York Times, you know, they have a bigger responsibility to keep content relevant and more engaging. And, you know, if you take away all this trending stuff about fake news and everything else, regardless of what publishing company you are, whether you're a big or a small publisher, the relevance of content is important and how people consume your content is even more important. So we've moved from, you know, readership to viewership, and blogging is now evolved to vlogging. And, you know, you look at brands like Facebook, they allow you to do Facebook Live videos. Brands like Snapchat allow you to do micro videos, Instagram Live, Facebook Live, and even LinkedIn now has LinkedIn Live. So a lot of these social networks realize that we couldn't just thrive on blogging because, you know, the capture of the human mind is more visual, and we're now entering a stage of digital storytelling. And so it's changing from digital storytelling to visual storytelling. So blogging has evolved. Blogging has come a long way from 2012 when I spoke about, you know, blogging. It's changed to a point now where we are really changing how we take a message and put it out there more visually. And you can see that through all your platforms. If you look at your cell phone now, you can send videos to each other. You can do video WhatsApp messages. All these different platforms have bandwidth that introduces us to communicate through video. So, you know, I think blogging will have a new term. I think blogging, like everything else in this digital world, will change to something else. Is it relevant today? Absolutely. It became relevant because Google was allowing brands to take their content and list those websites on their search engines. So a great example is if you type in certain words, websites will start to show up. And that's what blogging was used for. But, you know, earlier in the interview, I said humans tend to take good things and turn it into bad things because of leverage. Blogging has also been misused. People create fake blogs or they put in phrases so that they can show up on Google. But when you click on those links, you know, you have a website that's not relevant to what you're looking for. And Google has had to manage that over the years and create algorithms to combat that because, unfortunately, there's two types of wolves in each of us as marketers. It's the good wolf that does things for good and the bad wolf that tries to leverage and take shortcuts. You know, I think that that's been the detriment of a lot of the challenges we have in digital marketing today is that things start to go wrong when we try to take shortcuts, like anything in life, right? So it's one of those things where, you know, there's an ethical responsibility to create content, but blogging has certainly evolved over time.
I asked you before about rebranding a company. But your passion, it seems like, is really people and improving the lives of people. How can we use those strategies to change our own personal story? So if we've had a bad story, what strategies can we use to improve our lives?
Well, I'm going to answer that in two forms. I believe a company is made up of people, and that's why my passion is people. I think you can't run a company without empowering people that work for that company. You know, we have moved from, you know, B2B, which is business to business or business to consumer, and we're now human to human. If you go look at, you know, every brand out there, whether it's Amazon or Google, we're really investing in our workforce. We're really investing in how we work with people. I just read a post today that Arianna Huffington has a tool that basically deletes all emails for employees that are on vacation. So when they come back from vacation, they don't have to catch up with their emails, which I think is an incredible tool, because at the end of the day, wouldn't we want to go on vacation and not come back and feel like we need a vacation from our vacations? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think, you know, going back to why I'm passionate about people, I learned very quickly that, you know, the success of a digital agency is really infused on the relationships we build, which is one of my core values. As far as rebranding, I think people play a huge role, because we influence each other. You know, we're at an age today where marketing has evolved to influenceship. Advertising has evolved to influenceship. So if you looked at some of the top Super Bowl advertisements that occurred, you know, a few days ago, they had a lot of celebrities that were infused in this message, because at the end of the day, they understand that celebrities are the power of endorsement. So rebranding really relies on people now, because gone are the days of billboards, gone are the days of, you know, ads in the yellow pages or flyers that get sent to the mail. You know, those still work and they still are relevant, but at a smaller percentage to human endorsement.
What about for the person who isn't satisfied with their life thus far? What strategies would you have for them to kind of rebrand their life?
When it comes to the personal life, I really think that, you know, you go back to the basics and you ask yourself a question of, are you living life by default or are you living a life by design? Which was, you know, one of the emphasis of my TEDx talk that I had in 2016. I spoke about how to live life with purpose and momentum. And I opened and I closed with the same question. Are you living life by design or by default? And I think the challenge that most people have when they're struggling is when you start to ask these key questions to identify what defines their lifestyle, everything is based on routine. And I'm not against mediocrity, but I'm against having a routine where you're constantly going on the same cycle, expecting different results. Mm-hmm. You know, when people say they're going to quit smoking while they're smoking, or say they're going to lose weight while they're, you know, eating unhealthy, or when people say that they're going to pay off their debt as they're using their credit card, that's that insanity cycle where nothing changes. You know, you end up being at that same place. So it takes a lot of courage to redesign your life. It takes a lot of emphasis and focus on understanding the power of habit, but understanding what are the habits you want to keep and what are the habits you want to elevate. And I think that's the key question. You know, for me, as an immigrant, I came to this country with a lot of fear and a lot of need for validation for myself. So if you asked me at 19, would I ever speak for TEDx, I would probably have said no, because I was so nervous and I didn't find myself. But I was fortunate enough to discover my purpose, and I was fortunate enough to understand that I needed to make a lot of changes in my life to receive those changes and allow myself permission to do that. And you know, when I set my eyes on the TED Talk, it took me 3 tries. And when I finally got into the nomination to speak for TEDx, it took me over 300 hours of practice and 25 rehearsals and, you know, a whole lot of hours for 18 minutes that changed my life.
Wow. Since our show is called Nobody Told Me, we always like to ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? What is it that you have learned on this journey that nobody told you or nobody could have told you?
That's a really good question. I think that was the one question that I was looking forward to, and I did a little bit of soul searching myself. And I'm reading this book called Love Her Wild by Atticus, and he's a poet. And he said something that really related to me, and he said, the paragraph said, we are all wolves howling to the same moon. And I think for me, you know, nobody tells you about the journey you're on. Nobody prepares you for the experiences you're going to face. Nobody shows you the right path. Nobody can really know where you end up. That said, nobody told me that when I finally got to the destination, that it would be what I thought it would be. And what I found out is, you know, we're all wolves that howl at that same moon, but we're all on this journey, and you can't, you know, as much as we try to optimize ourselves, as much as we try to improve ourselves, as much as we try to find ourselves, nobody told me that accepting where we are today is the most powerful tool to embrace change. Before you can change, you have to accept where you are. And nobody told me that.
Wow. That's a phenomenal answer to that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, man. That really makes you think.
We love to ask the question because we always get great answers, but yours is one of the best.
Well, I think, you know, it really comes down to, you know, understanding that we are in a society right now that's really changing. And you know, let's look outside of the political landscape. Let's look outside of the, you know, challenges we're facing. But the world is really evolving in different ways. And there's a lot of different urgencies for us to be, not only to do good, but to be better human beings. You know, for me as an immigrant, I worry about, you know, things that I didn't think I would worry about, but living in North America has, you know, in many ways sheltered me, but because I come from an African country, you know, it keeps me up at night wondering, what are we going to do about sustainable issues like clean water? And, you know, when you read stories about what's happening in South Africa and Cape Town, where by April, they're not going to have fresh water. You know, when you read about, I'm mentoring a couple of TEDx speakers. I've been asked to be an ambassador, and I was coaching a Syrian refugee who's about to do a TEDx talk, and he was telling me that the biggest reason why we have refugees today isn't because of political turmoil, but because of global warming and environmental issues. And, you know, scientists are predicting that in 50 years, you know, one of the biggest issues that we have is the migrancy of people from places like Bangladesh and Sudan, because these places will be unlivable. You know, those are the things that start to change your perspective, and you start to realize, you know, there's a bigger purpose for us as human beings, but we have to accept that this is where we are now. And I think that whether you're looking at it from a personal landscape or as a relatable landscape, we really have to accept the fact that we have a problem before we can look at fixing it.
And anybody who has not checked out your TEDx talk about changing your life from average to epic needs to. You can just Google it, and it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Everyone should check it out. Bosco, it's been amazing to talk to you. You're the founder of Tribe One, a top digital marketing agency, a top public speaker. You've spoken at TEDx and Social Media Week, and we just really appreciate your time and all of your expertise and your honesty and helping us tell our story.
Yeah.
We appreciate the question you asked us. I think it made us think.
Very much so. And Bosco, how can people get in touch with you if they would like to learn more about you or your services?
Yeah, so I, you know, everything can be found under @BoscoAnthony. So if you're on Facebook, you're on Instagram, you're on Snapchat, you're on LinkedIn, I basically own all the handles that basically are Bosco Anthony.
Okay.
So you can find me on any of those platforms. I tend to be more on Instagram lately just because it seems to be the tool of choice when it comes to social engagement. But, you know, as a social media influencer, I would say that we're all responsible for the tribe that we follow. So it's important for us to engage as well. So a lot of people think that, you know, there's this misconception that we don't respond to social messages, but we do. So if anyone's looking to seek any advice, counsel, or, you know, just wants to engage, you know, just find me under Bosco Anthony on any of those platforms.
Okay. And BoscoAnthony.com as well.
Yes.
Super. Thank you again for joining us. That's been Bosco Anthony. You've been listening to Nobody Told Me. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
And thank you so much for joining us.